What I knew of Cambodia was this. We bombed it pretty bad during the Vietnam War, and then there was a communist revolution where 1, maybe 2 million people died. But that was 20 years ago. It might be a very nice place by now. I called back and said my bag was already packed. Raffles International specializes in renovating grand hotels. The company has recently renovated 2 French colonialist hotels in Cambodia, the Hotel Le Royal in the capital of Phnom Penh and the Grand Hotel de Angkor in Siem Reap, a small town near the ancient temples of the Angkor civilization. Unfortunately, almost nobody had been visiting Cambodia lately. Last July, just as the millions and millions of dollars in renovations in both hotels were being completed, the Cambodian government went to war with itself. There were tanks squaring off in the streets, shooting at each other, bomb holes in the airport, blood spattered on the walls of the terminal building. Tourists and foreign aid officials couldn't get out of the country fast enough. They fled in C-1 transport planes brought in by the Thai Air Force. Since then, tourism in Cambodia has dwindled to a small number of young European, Japanese, and American backpackers with nowhere near enough money to stay at a Raffles hotel. We were met at the airport in Phnom Penh by the manager of Hotel Le Royal, a suave British expatriate with an expensive suit and perfect hair. We rode into town in a BMW limousine. Phnom Penh is mainly 2- and 3-story buildings, with shops on the lower level that open out to the streets, which are covered with a thick pad of light brown dirt. I asked the manager what the political situation was like in the country now, whether there was still a civil war going on, and he said that the country was remarkably calm and stable. He said there had been a perceived negativism in the press lately, which has been regrettable and unfortunate, and that the city itself hasn't been as peaceful and as safe in a long time. My room at Le Royal was the Charles de Gaulle suite, real Persian rugs, wall-to-wall marble in the bathroom, and a cable television. I turned it on and watched the second Ghostbusters film. I flipped to CNBC and watched the weather report for all of Asia, cloudy in Lhasa, snow in Beijing, 95 degrees in Singapore. I was supposed to go to lunch and then tour Le Royal with the group, but I was uncomfortable being led around by the nose, so I left. And for 15 cents got in a cyclo headed south down Monavong Boulevard. A cyclo is a goofy tricycle rickshaw taxi where you sit in an open one-seat buggy down low to the ground and hang your feet out in front to the oncoming traffic, which is continuous and coming on both sides. Cyclos and motorcycles and whole schools like fish, cars and trucks marauding about pretty much at will, as the only traffic rule seems to be that the bigger vehicle has right-of-way. There's no question of whether you drive in the left lane or the right lane. In Cambodia, there's just the road, which is like a river that flows in 2 directions at once. I had the driver pull over at Lucky Lucky Motorcycle Rentals, where I spoke with Mr. Lucky. He recommended that I take a 250cc dirt bike, and I agreed. $7 a day, and I'd have to leave my passport. I asked him if it would be okay with him if I rode the bike up Highway 6 to the Angkor Temple, a distance I figured to be around 200 miles. Mr. Lucky said yes, but that I should watch out for police and military personnel and to not stop for them under any circumstances, that I should ride away from them as quickly as possible. I gave Mr. Lucky my passport and rode out into the river of traffic. My plan was to get away from the hotel and travel through the countryside, where 90% of Cambodians actually live. But Mr. Lucky had worried me a bit, so I made my way across town to the office of the United Nations Development Program and asked to speak to the security officer. He said that there were basically 3 towns that were safe for tourists now: Phnom Penh, Siem Reap near the temples, and Sihanoukville on the southern coast, but that tourists should not travel there by road or by train or by boat, but instead to fly in and out of each town. He said that the countryside, the jungle, was ruled not only by the Khmer Rouge, but other rival factions as well, and that they all had guns, a lot of guns. And that if you're a foreigner, they figure the ransom will be very high, or they'll just kill you for the motorcycle alone. He said that I should be careful and alert to such things as if, for instance, all of a sudden the traffic stops and the road becomes empty, that this would mean something was wrong. Then he said he'd like to visit with me some more, but that as it was 5 o'clock he'd be leaving, and that maybe I should go talk to the journalists who hang out at the Foreign Correspondents Club, a bar along the Mekong River. The club was on the second floor of a building facing the confluence of the Tonle Sap and Mekong rivers. The wall toward the river was open floor to ceiling, and there was a tiled veranda looking out over the water. The place smelled of beer and marijuana, which is not exactly legal, but somewhat tolerated in Cambodia. It was a great view, a great bar. I asked the bartender for a beer and whether there were any journalists in the house, and he made a sweeping gesture with his arm as if to say they were all journalists. Then I asked him for the best journalist, and he pointed to a man sitting in an armchair, holding court with 6 or 7 others. I went over and introduced myself and pled first for mercy in the face of my ignorance and then boldly asked for a briefing. I've used the same tactic in bars in Nevada and Wyoming, only to have met with the gravest of consequences. But praise Jesus and Phnom Penh, it worked, and I was taken in by Ed Fitzgerald, correspondent for the Asia Business News and also CNBC's Asia Report. He was drinking apple juice and smoking cigarettes. I drank beer and smoked his friend's marijuana and got generally overwhelmed as he laid out the basic scenario. He said the king, Norodom Sihanouk, fled the country in January, fearing for his life, and is now living in Beijing. The prince, Norodom Rinnerid, fled last July, one day before the military coup, and is now living in Paris. His royalist forces are hiding in the jungle, and some are now said to be allied with the Khmer Rouge. Since July, foreign aid, which once comprised 60% of the Cambodian federal budget, has disappeared. The current economy is jungle-based, the money being primarily in hardwood and heroin. In Cambodia, he said, 1 out of 10 babies die at birth. In Cambodia, 1 out of 5 children die before the age of 5. 60% of the people here are under the age of 26. This is a country, he said, the size of the state of Missouri, on which the U.S. dropped 600,000 tons of bombs from 1969 to 1973. This is a country that then went through a communist revolution where 1.5 million people were tortured and murdered or died from starvation and disease. A country where there are now less than 10 million people alive, but more than 10 million landmines still in the ground. I know thousands of amputees, he said. Thousands. I think you should encourage people to come here, he said. Tourism is a good thing for Cambodia. It brings in dollars and it brings in people who see how things are, and then they go home and talk about it. And it is, after all, a very beautiful country. The people, after all they've been through, are warm, even passionate, and very friendly to tourists. I think you should tell people to come here, but that they should be smart about it. Don't come to Cambodia and rent a motorcycle and head off down the highway. This is not a country for the unwary. This is not Tahiti. This is not Bali. You can die here.